Readers Entertainment presents Book Lights, where we are shining the light on good books.
Hello, everyone. Guess what? It's Friday. usually we're on Tuesdays, but we're doing a special show today on Friday with thriller author T.J. O'Connor because he has a new book that's coming out very soon, and we were full on Tuesdays. There were not enough Tuesdays in May, so we're doing a special Friday show, so happy Friday. And if you've never listened before, I'm Lisa Kessler. I'm your host, and I write paranormal romances, lots of danger and things. And I also love reading thrillers, so I'm very excited to have TJ on the show. I'm just going to read you his bio if you're not familiar with TJ, and then we'll bring him on. TJ O'Connor is an independent security consultant and a former government anti-terrorism agent. Very cool, right? He has traveled the world to investigate terrorism and other security threats. This depth of experience fills his thriller novels with real places, real people, and real dangers. The consultant is the first in the Jonathan Hunter series. TJ lives in Winchester, Virginia with his wife. And I did put TJ's website and his Facebook page on the blog talk page. So if you are listening there, you can easily click on that and check out all of his books and connect with him on Facebook too, because he does post over there as well, and then you won't miss anything. So TJ, are you there?
I am here. Hello.
Hello. Great to have you on the show. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to everybody. It doesn't mean much for me because 7 days a week I'm going, but I hope everybody else out there is enjoying their Friday.
That's right. so tell us a little bit about the consultant. Why should we go and pre-order it right now? Why do we need it?
Well, it's quintessential, right? So, I mean, the great J adventurers of the thriller markets over the last few years are, of course, Jack Bauer, James Bond, Jack Reacher, and my book is kind of very dissimilar to those, but it's both fun and a little bit lighthearted in some places, but it's a serious story about what happens to a small town in Virginia, Winchester, where I live, when terror comes back to the United States in a big way. And it takes on the character. I write in the first person. Jonathan Hunter is telling the story. And he faces so many different things. He's been overseas for a long time, about 20 years. He's been estranged from his family. And when he comes back and discovers his brother is brutally murdered in front of him, he's completely taken aback by the changes in the country, by what's happening in Winchester as this terrorist situation starts to unfold around him. And he's really caught in the middle between what his old life as a terrorism consultant used to be in the Middle East and what it's become here in the States. And it's sort of a look at him as he comes to grip with being back in the States. He comes to grip with losing his family, and he comes to grip with what his life's about to become when he faces all these things back home. So it's a quick read. It's an action-oriented thriller. It's got a few politics. It talks a lot about current events with the Russians, the Iranians, and the refugee questions that face us. But it also wraps around Jonathan Hunter, the character. And, you know, I'm selfish. You know, I wrote it. It's a great book, and I think people are going to really enjoy it.
Yeah, it sounds fabulous. And while you were talking, I was like, oh my gosh, have you ever noticed Jack Bauer, James Bond, Jack Reacher, Jonathan Hunter? They all start with J.
You know, I have noticed that. It's been pointed out to me by a couple people. And it was, I would love to say mine came first, but it didn't because I'm the new kid on the block. But it's been a name. John Hunter has been a character in three novels, two of which that were never published. They're still sitting on a shelf somewhere waiting to come to life. And it's, you know, the first one I wrote about him was 25 years ago when I was a young OSI agent. And it kind of got shelved for a while. And then when I brushed off the character a few years ago and started writing The Consultant in its first draft, I loved the character so much I just kept him. And then, of course, my literary agent, the amazing Kimberly Cameron, says to me, oh, it's not another Jack Reacher and all the Jacks who are super perfect and always hit their targets and are Superman. I said, no, he's the antithesis of all that. So he is one of the J characters, but that's probably as close to James Bond as he gets.
Oh, well, so he doesn't have a cool watch that'll turn into a car or anything?
No, and he doesn't. In fact, I don't want to give out too much about the book, but his life challenges include bringing back cars to the rental place full of bullet holes and smoking tires and asking if his extra insurance coverage will cover it.
Okay, sounds like he's relatable then.
Yeah, he's pretty down to earth. You know, I was a government agent for about 14 years with the military, and then a private consultant in one capacity or the other the rest of my life. And as much as I love those stories, and some of the most brilliant writers out there in the thriller market write those kinds of characters, I didn't want to write that because, you know, I've been there, done that to some extent. I'm certainly not a Jonathan Hunter, or I've never been a Navy SEAL or a Green Beret, although I have those guys that I work with a lot. I just wanted him to be a down-to-earth, relatable character that, for people that wanted a thriller to see how a real person would react, that's what Jonathan Hunter has become.
Nice. Well, it sounds fabulous. So were you inspired to write? You said you wrote your first book 25 years ago. So while you were an agent, did that inspire you to write, or did you read a book and you went, oh, my gosh, I want to write?
No, I actually... A quick correction, I wrote the first Jonathan Hunter story 25 years ago. I actually wrote first novel right out of high school. Ever since I was in the fifth grade and reading The Hardy Boys and Mystery of the Witch's Bridge and The Haunted Mine and stories like that for that age, I just wanted to write. And what really inspired me to decide that I was going to actually write a novel was James Grady's 6 Days of the Condor. And it inspired me not only to fulfill my desire to write, but to some degree it also pushed me into intelligence work and anti-terrorism. So right out of high school, you know, you think you're indestructible because, wow, you got a high school diploma. And I wrote my first book, and oh, my God, it was horrible. And I still have it somewhere, and it's under lock and key so that nobody will ever see it, not that anybody ever would see it, but... You know, and then a few years went by, and I wrote another one, and then a couple years later, I wrote another one, and in that group was the first Jonathan Hunter book. And then over the years, I kind of had to wait, because if you never try to get published, you know, you can't make any money, so you have to actually work for a living and raise a family. And then a few years ago, I had an opportunity to do it on my pace, and I got started, and that's how Jonathan Hunter finally came to be again on paper.
Wow, so he was like a lifelong quest.
He was. And you know, the character, I just loved him so much from the beginning, because as I started writing him, you know, way back in the late 80s and 90s when I started really trying to chip away at a reasonable book, was because he was sort of a real person. And I was reading Ludlum and I was reading John Le Carré, you know, as many as I could get a hold of. And as much as I love those guys, and they're absolutely brilliant guys, I wanted something that I could look at and say, yeah, you know, I could do that part. And that's what came to be. And back then I had a couple of good friends who were also OSI agents, and they read it, the first draft. And other than saying it's terrible, they said, I really love this guy. You got to keep trying. And then over the years, when it was time to really start getting serious, he's the guy that I wanted to pursue.
Very cool. So what does OSI stand for us non-government people?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, if you're not in the military, you probably never heard of it. It is the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. So two things important about that. If you remember the $6 million man from the 70s, that's the organization that he allegedly belonged to. But it's a real organization. It is sort of the Air Force's FBI. It's the equivalent of NCIS. Which, of course, gets a TV show, and OSI never got a TV show. But
right. Oh, well, but, you know, you guys did get the $6 million man.
Yeah, that's right. We got the first one. It's just that, you know, none of us got bionics. We just got to go out and bust bad guys and chase spies.
Oh, well, they didn't make you bigger, faster, stronger.
Well, no, that came after I left, and I had to do that on my own.
The internet gave you that.
Yes, that's right. The internet was born, and suddenly we were all super famous.
We were all bigger, faster, stronger.
Yeah, at least on paper. Just don't look beyond Facebook.
That's right. So I told you before the show started that I was a huge 24 fan. Like, I watched every episode, so I feel like I could totally do counterterrorism. But you were telling me that might not really be real.
Well, yeah. That's right.
You mean if we hit someone with a hammer, we would go to jail? What?
You know, it's a terrible thing. And the other thing is, I love these shows, and don't mistake anything I'm about to say for any kind of a slam, because these are the guys that really bring a light on that world. And that was
right.
Certainly one of the big TV shows. One of my favorites today is Taken. And I love it because the characters are great characters. It came from the Liam Neeson movie several years ago when it became a series. And it's really well done. It's completely... I don't want to say fabricated, but it's got a lot of, oh my God, you can't do that, and oh,
right.
That would never happen. But it's a great show, and I love what it does to bring a very positive spotlight on the people that protect this country every day. So those
right.
kind of shows I absolutely like. There's a lot of unrealistic things in them, but you know what? If somebody's gonna, you buy my book, The Consultant, there's probably a CIA guy out there or somebody that's going to read and go, oh, no, that wouldn't happen. So, who knows?
Well, to be fair, though, it really would have slowed the pacing of 24 if Jack Bauer had to go and get a search warrant.
Yeah, well, that's true. And that was, and I've only seen that show a few times, but I know the basic concept. And also, nasty little things like the Patriot Act and,
right.
illegal spying programs and things. So you love to talk about them because they're real and they're sexy, but there's a really dark side to them that you've got to be careful about as well.
Exactly, yeah. So I think when we write fiction, we're always worried about pacing, and then, something like a search warrant or a subpoena, all of those things suddenly seem really boring and slowing my pacing, even though in real life, those are the protections that we all have so that we don't get Jack Bauer'd.
Well, that's right. And it's an interesting, statement. As you were talking, I was thinking to myself, gee, did I pay attention to that? And the answer is in The Consultant is that, he's an operator from Special Forces who started consulting with the CIA. And when he comes home, he's AWOL. He's unauthorized. He left his mission because his brother screamed, help me, and he ran home to help his brother. So he's in a lot of trouble with the government to begin with. And his mentor, a character named Oscar LaRue, is actually the shadow image, if it will, of my mentor, a fellow by the name of Wally Fedorov, who was one of the last OSS operatives from World War II and one of the former deputy directors of the CIA. And
wow.
He's sort of the by-the-book character, and this is what we've got to do. And John Hunter's more like send me a memo.
Right.
I'm gonna go do things my way. And I
right.
talk a little bit. I use things like the Patriot Act and warrants and things like that to explain to the reader, yeah, I get it. This is what's supposed to happen. But Hunter's not necessarily going to do all those things because he's literally trying to find his brother's killer and at the same time trying to stop what is coming is a series of terrorist attacks. So, yeah, Hunter knows those things are there, and he kind of snubs his nose at him and says, we'll talk warrants later, but for now I'm going to go get this guy.
There you go. Because, again, even if that's not a realistic thing for fiction, you need the pacing to keep going, and you just, you don't have time to go wait for a judge and a lawyer and make phone calls and
absolutely, and especially at the pace of what these things work, because in my real life I'm still an anti-terrorism consultant, also a criminal investigator as a licensed private investigator, and those silly little things like the Constitution and the Virginia Code always
right.
get in the way of having a good time.
Exactly, right. So for readers who are out there listening, when writers bend reality a little bit and skip those steps, it's often not because we don't know the steps exist, but it's just the pacing of the book. Even if we put it in, the editor's like, excuse me, we can't have
no,
a whole page about calling the judge and
Well, that's absolutely right, you know, and that's sort of why my wife doesn't like to watch thrillers with me, because I kind of pick them apart and say, oh, they couldn't do that, they couldn't, and somebody's going to do that to me on this book, I'm sure. But you're right. It's not because we don't know, it's because there's, you've got, you know, a target that you've got to get to. But I can tell you right now that both my agent, my publisher, and the people that have already read this have told me pacing's not a problem in this book. In fact, from the opening pages, when this horrific murder takes place, my agent kind of says to me she had to put the book down not because it was boring or because she had to catch her breath to get ready to read the next part of it. It's a very, very fast-moving story. I've picked up a trait that I don't really do intentionally, but I guess it's become more of a style. I write very short chapters. So my chapters are typically 5 to 7 pages, and that's it. So things move really rapidly. And if nothing else, one of the things that comes from this is, as it starts peeling down the road headed toward the end of the story, and there's a couple subplots in there, the speed picks up.
Right.
And I had a couple of reviewers come in and tell me, oh, my God, you know, you know, literally I had to slow myself down so I absorbed it all. And I don't mind that. You know, I would rather have somebody say, wow, I had to take a break because it was moving so rapidly and so many things were going on as it kind of careened toward the last few pages.
Right. Well, I teach sometimes writing classes, and one of the things about pacing is, as you get to, you know, that big black moment where everything is going to explode, you want, you know, shorter chapters, you want shorter sentences, because your character is actually, you know, thinking in fragments. I mean, when you're...
Exactly.
I've never worked in counterterrorism, but I would think that when you're chasing down a bad guy, you are not thinking in complete sentences. So.
Well, sometimes you're not thinking at all. But you know, just so that nobody ever calls me a liar, I want to be clear on a really technical point. I have never been in counterterrorism. I have always been in anti-terrorism, and that sounds like
what's the difference?
A strange distinction. But I want to give credit where credit is due. So, counterterrorism people, special forces, Green Berets, Navy SEALs, Army Rangers, etc. These are the guys that, you know, literally, they get up on Blackhawks, they zoom into bad places, and they take care of bad people. It is an offensive process to go out and stop the enemy. Now, anti-terrorism is the other side. It's the defensive. So we, you know, people like me, I've done investigations in terrorism. We run protection operations. We design security programs. We analyze threats and risk. Certainly, there is the high probability of engagement. There is the high potential of getting into, you know, dark and dangerous situations. But it's a defensive role, not an offensive role. And that may sound kind of silly for me to kind of point that out, but there's been a couple of people who have consulted with me on these books who are the real deal. Former Special Forces guys, particularly a Green Beret friend of mine who's retired, and I always say, you know, he's got the there. He's been there, done that. He's the real counterterrorism guy. I've always been the other guy. And
right.
I only point that
out. You're the one who tries to keep the terrorism from happening, and they get involved after it's happened, right?
Exactly. I just want to make sure credit's given to those people, that nobody comes on my website and says, hey, you said you were in counterterrorism, and you're not. So
anti-terrorism, totally different.
Exactly.
Okay, I gotcha. We have one person who's holding on who might have a question. So are you willing to take a reader question?
Sure, unless it's from the NSA, and then I want to get a lawyer first.
Okay, let's see if I can get them on here. Hello, are you there?
Greetings in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. This is Pastor Don Jr., CEO of the Entertainment Worldwide Network. Yes, I'm alive in the flesh, and I'm calling from Sunny Mesa, Arizona. How y'all doing?
We're good.
How are you doing?
I'm full of energy, man. I just love just all the knowledge and wisdom that you've been dropping. A lot of times people see these bills and laws, and they don't know that things go on behind the scenes to implement this stuff. If you could, I want to get your take on how you thought about what Snowden did, because I've always wanted to just speak to somebody with high level of clearance, but I've never been put in the right platform or capacity. But how would you feel about what he did and how he went about doing what he did?
I don't know who you're asking about.
Who are you referring to?
The guy who blew the whistle and put out all the private secrets about the government being able to have access to the Google Gmail and all our text messages and all the extra NSA security that wasn't supposed to be enforcing on our personal rights. That's why I was the guy who blew the whistle. How did you feel about what he did?
Okay, let me be fair and answer. I will answer the question the best I can, but in order to be fair, because that's an ongoing investigation involving national security, I don't want to comment on the individual or the situation because that would be highly inappropriate for me to do that. But I will comment on the general situation, and that's I'm kind of on the fence on it. I got to be honest with you. I worry a lot about the infringement of our rights, particularly under things like the Patriot Act and stuff. These things absolutely are necessary to protect us as citizens, but we also have to be careful that those things have the appropriate checks and balances to protect us against abuse. It's really a very complicated situation, and releasing this information in a situation where it places our operators and other citizens in jeopardy of retaliation, that's absolutely inappropriate. That's very, very dangerous. At the same time, there are some things that, you know, are being kept confidential and being kept out of the public eye that probably need to get a little bit more light put on them, like the use of our FISA courts and things like that. You know, we have a check and balance in this country for a reason, and when those things are not allowed to completely be fulfilled, I think that's dangerous. But I really don't want to comment about that specific case you're talking about, simply because it's an ongoing issue both for our government and the courts, and I don't want to weigh into that individual. Is that a fair answer?
That was a perfect answer. I have one more question about your book. Now,
okay.
I'm a novice to this stuff, and if you could, what would you say would be, as a novice, the most key thing that I want to key into your book? Because from start to finish, it keeps the point, but it's somewhat Japanese to me because I'm still learning, as a pastor, how to go into the government. So in order to learn how to go into the government, you need to learn the language and the proper terminology. So for you, what would you say should I click on the most as being a novice going through this walk?
Well, not real sure where you're going with that. I would probably say to you, if you're going to read The Consultant, you're going to see not so much a story about the government situation. What you're going to find is the story about a government consultant who comes home and is sort of – his whole life is in upheaval because he finds out his brother, whom he's not spoken with for 20 years, is murdered. He finds out his brother had a family he didn't know about. And because he's not been home in the United States for 20 years – all that's going on in our country is really shocking to him. So it becomes a story about how Jonathan Hunter comes to grip with this crisis in America over terrorism and his participation in it to find his brother's killer. And he takes a very eclectic view to it. So it's not really about the government doing things. It's about this single operative who is sort of operating outside the government channels now as an individual, and how he tracks down his brother's killer. And at the same time, it does ask a real important question, and this may be of interest to you, and that's, you know, as these terrorist events start unfolding, there is a little retaliation against foreigners and refugees and things. We saw a little bit of that at 9/11, not a lot, but a little. And it sort of asks the question, is this really who we want to be? Don't we want to make sure we have the answers before we start acting out on things? So Hunter is in the middle of answering that for himself and also for his family as the plot unfolds.
I can't wait to get the book, man. Y'all on fire. I just really love the show, sister. I just love your energy and your enthusiasm, how you've been bringing out a lot of key points about the book. And it's very informative. So, yeah, where can I go purchase that at?
Well, you can get it anywhere. Right now, you can go on Amazon. It's available for pre-order. It releases in 10 days, but I understand they're already shipping the pre-orders. And, I hope you pick it up. And if you pick it up, you can go to my website and, you can check in with me there. I'd love for you to give me a review on Amazon or Goodreads. And by all means, there's a way that you can contact me via my website. Send me the book. I'll sign it and send it back to you.
Amen. Thank you so much. I feel good today.
Thanks so much.
Well,
thanks so much for calling in and for listening.
Thank you.
All right. So that was a great question.
It was a great question, and I had to be very careful because I truly don't want to comment on an ongoing matter. But he does raise the question. That's a really interesting question considering my book.
Right, yeah, yeah, and how your book ties into, you know, that kind of thing. Now, you mentioned at the beginning that this is a new series, right? Do you know how many books there's going to be for John
Well,
Hunter?
I think I'm planning on about 1,000, maybe 2,000. But I think probably more realistically, I've already written the sequel to The Consultant. As a matter of fact, about 3 hours ago, my agent forwarded it on to my publisher. The sequel.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. It's tentatively titled Provocateur, and it takes on some more issues that are kind of near and dear to us as a country and also to Hunter personally. And that's probably all I want to say about it right now because it hasn't even been accepted by my publisher yet. But I'm really anxious for it to come out, and I've already started book three.
Good. You know, when I was first starting as a writer, the best advice I ever got was write the next book because everything in publishing is so slow. And then all of a sudden your book comes out and they're like, what else do you have? And if you've already written the next book, then you're 5 jumps ahead of the next guy. So that's great.
Yeah, well, you know, and as a writer, you know, you go to some of these book events and you go to – I do everything from conferences to trade fairs and charity events. And there's always a few people that come up and go, wow, you know, I'm going to write a book. And I kind of look
right.
at them and get this grin and go, well, look, here's my card. When you get done, you let me know. Because
That's
the hardest
right.
thing for anybody is to get to the end.
Is to
and
finish,
then,
yeah.
You know, there are so many avenues to publish. It's – if you just want to get published, you can do that on your own, of course. If you want the litmus test of a traditional publisher and agent, you go the route that I did. But as you were kind of getting to, once you sell it, then the real work starts. Writing the book is
exactly.
hard work, and it's more work than anybody understands. But then the real work starts when you get a
exactly.
publisher, and that's selling it, promoting it, blogging
right.
it, emailing it. You know, that's
yep.
where the real rubber hits the road.
Well, and when you're writing the book, you're doing creative things. It's fun. You're, you know, well, part the middle is never fun, but once you get to race to the end, you know, it's thrilling. And but then the book, you know, you have to go through edits. You have to do, you know, promotions for when it comes out, so that you'll be able to write the next book. And yeah, that's when the real work starts. You know, it's not easy. You can't just throw a book up and people know it exists. So, you know, it's hard work.
It's more work than anybody understands.
So, are there any other genres you've been dreaming about writing, or is it just thrillers?
Well, dreaming about writing, no. So I've got 4 murder mysteries out. They all have what I always say is a paranormal spin to them. They were my first published books, never meant for publication. The first one was a book called Dying to Know, and it was the story about a detective here in Winchester. I love writing about this town. It's a wonderful town. And the detective is literally killed in the first 3 pages, and he comes back and narrates the story about how the killer is brought to justice, and he plays an active role in the investigation. And
As a ghost?
Yeah, as a ghost. So it's sort of like Ghost meets Richard Castle. It's a lighthearted
uh-huh.
story. It's not funny, haha, but it's very lighthearted. And it was written only for my adult daughter, and I was literally doing the first draft of The Consultant under a different name, and I wrote this book for her. And it came out really well, and she gave it to her book club, and they loved it. I said, oh, what the heck, I've already written it, I'll send it out. Well, it got me Kimberly Cameron for my literary agent and my first book contract.
Wonderful.
It was
Wonderful.
Purely accidental, but, you know, poof, there it was.
You know, sometimes that kind of synchronicity just happens, and that's very cool. And I love your analogy of, like, you know, a ghost castle. that's good. I like that show. So I can't believe our half hour is, like, up. So before we go, do you have an author newsletter that people can sign up for or anything like that on your website for people to check out?
Well, there's a few things on my website. First of all, anybody that's curious about the book, I did a really – I had a great company called Circle of Seven, whoever those guys are. They did a wonderful video for me on The Consultant, and it's on my website. There is my blog. I try to blog at least once a month. And there is a place to sign up for the newsletter. Right now, I don't do the newsletter through that. What I tend to do is get the information, and when I put something out on it, I send an email out. And because I'm still a nobody, and you know, nobody's you know gonna stalk me or anything yet. It when somebody wants to, when I send the emails out to people for what would be a newsletter, it allows them to respond to me and ask questions, and I can have a little back and forth from time to time with them. So for now, that's what I'm doing. In the future, maybe, you know, if there's too many people on there, I won't be able to do that. But there is a way to communicate with me and sign up for that blog and for that news information.
Great. Well, don't forget to go pre-order TJ's new book, The Consultant. And thanks so much for being on. It was great chatting with you.
Well,
thank you for joining
much.
Us on Book Life.
Bye-bye.
Be sure to connect with us at readersentertainment.com for articles, blogs, videos, and podcasts that matter to readers.